And yesterday also was the disappearance day of our very dear and very exalted God brother, His Holiness Gaur Govinda Swami Maharaj. Because those two occasions were clashing, it was decided that we will have a special class on Srila Gaur Govinda Swami Maharaj. And therefore, instead of having a class on Book Bhagavat, we'll have the class today on a person Bhagavat. His Holiness Gaur Govinda Swami Maharaj Ki Jai. Gaur Govinda Swami Maharaj is Tirobhav Mahatsav. Gaur Premanande. On the disappearance days of exalted devotees, we sing a special song composed by Srila Narottam Das Thakur. It goes like, Jianilo Premodhano Koruna Prachur Hano Prabhu Kotha Gela Acharya Thakur Kaha Moro Sharup Rupo Kaha Sanatan Kaha Dasa Raghunatha Patito Pavan Kaha Moro Bhatta Jugo Kaha Kobiraj Eko Kale Kotha Gela Gaura Nataraj Pashane Kutibo Matha Anale Poshibo Gaurango Gunero Nidhi Kotha Gele Pabo Sheshabo Shangira Shange Jekoilo Bilash Sheshango na paiya kande Narottam Das. Although most of you know this song, still I'll just read the translation first before singing this song. He who brought the treasure of divine love and who was filled with compassion and mercy, where has such a personality as Srinivas Acharya gone? Where are my Swarup Damodar and Rupa Goswami? Where is Sanatan? Where is Raghunath Das, the savior of the fallen? Where are my Raghunath Bhatta and Gopal Bhatta? And where is Krishna Das Kaviraj? Where did Lord Gauranga, the great dancer, suddenly go? I will smash my head against the rock and enter into the fire. Where will I find Lord Gauranga, the reservoir of all wonderful qualities? Being unable to obtain the association of Lord Gauranga, accompanied by all of these devotees in whose association he performed his pastimes, Narottam Das simply weeps.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
His Holiness Gaur Govinda Swami Maharaj Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada attracted many exalted spiritual personalities. And His Holiness Gaur Govinda Swami Maharaj is one of them. When you look at his life, we can see that from the very beginning of his life, he had been a very, very dedicated devotee of Krishna, very exalted devotee of Krishna. Maharaj appeared in a small village in Odisha called Jagannathpur, and he appeared in a devotee family. His father Ishwar Manik and mother Pata Devi were very wonderful devotees. His maternal grandfather, his mother's father, was such a exalted devotee of Krishna that the whole day he used to just chant the holy name. And he was also very famous as a kirtaniya. He had his kirtan group, and I heard that on special occasions the king of Odisha used to call his group to Jagannath Puri and to Katak, which was the capital, to chant the holy name of the Lord. His mother's family in a village called Godaigiri, which was about 14 kilometers from Jagannathpur, had been worshipping Sri Sri Radha Gopalji deities for more than 350 years. Jai Sri Sri Panchatattva ki jai. Jai Sri Sri Radha Madhava Shriman Mahaprabhu ki. Sri Sri Prahlad Nrisimha Dev ki jai. So we can see that by Krishna's divine arrangement, he appeared in a devotee family and had a very wonderful spiritual upbringing from his childhood. He was born on 2nd September 1929. When he was 8 years old, he already read Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita. And not only he studied these scriptures, but he could actually give classes. He could speak on those topics as an 8-year-old boy. He was also a very brilliant student. Unfortunately, his father left this planet when he was 27 years old, and the responsibility of maintaining the family came upon him. So he could not go to the university, but although he didn't have the opportunity to go to the university, but on his own he studied. During the work he used to work, during the day he used to work, and at night he used to prepare for his graduation course. And although he appeared privately, but he stood second in the Utkal University. That shows what a brilliant personality he was. And then after doing his BA, he did his B.Ed, and he took the occupation of a teacher. And although he was involved in his household life, but he was extremely detached. I personally have seen, like, when Maharaj was in Bhubaneswar, the temple, the many devotees, and I got to know, I was introduced to one boy who was his son. He was also staying in the temple, but he did not get any special treatment as Maharaj's son. He was just like any other devotee there. So Maharaj was extremely detached, and then when he was 45 years old, Maharaj left home. He just left home and started to travel around India to the holy places. And he went to Himalayas, and Maharaj naturally was quite disappointed with this Mayavad influence in the community of the sadhus. Like most of the so-called sadhus are impersonalists nowadays. And it's very painful for a devotee. And finally Maharaj came to Vrindavan, and in Vrindavan he thought that in Vrindavan he'll find the Vaishnava association. And although all four sampradayas were very well established in Vrindavan, and Maharaj used to go to different ashrams, spend days together, stay in the ashram, listen to them, but he could see that even though they were Vaishnavas, it was not really appealing to his heart, because he couldn't find pure Krishna consciousness in them. In that respect, we can consider that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu influenced two countries very effectively, two parts of India, Bengal and Orissa. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for the first 24 years of his stay on this planet, he stayed in Bengal, he started Sankirtan movement, and he created a tremendous influence. And then Nityananda Prabhu continued that. And Orissa, he himself was there. And a unique thing about Orissa is actually the land of Jagannath. And as a result of that, most of the people there are great devotees. They have inherent attachment to Krishna, to Lord Jagannath. But unfortunately, due to the British influence, the British, when they came to India, they first came to Bengal, they first came to Calcutta, and they established their setup in Calcutta. And as a result of that British influence, Mahaprabhu's teachings were sort of lost. And as you all know, then all kinds of aposampradayas started to crop up, and the teachings of Lord Chaitanya was practically covered over. And then came Ramakrishna Vivekananda. The whole of Bengal became totally spoilt by their false and non-spiritual propaganda. Whereas Orissa was not affected by any of these things. Therefore, the Krishna consciousness remained quite intact in Orissa. Even today we can see the difference between Bengal and Orissa. In Bengal, gradually due to Prabhupada's influence, things are changing. Due to our preaching, due to Namhat preaching, all the villages and all, Krishna consciousness is being established. But Odisha is very different. Like, even if you go to some villages, you see people are so, so devoted, so Krishna conscious. So we can understand why Gaur Govinda Maharaj was disappointed when he even went to Vrindavan. Because that pure Krishna bhakti was not there in these, he couldn't find them in these four sampradayas. Then one day he saw a sign. The International Society for Krishna Consciousness. It was nothing that impressive. Like the construction was going on. It was like a construction site. But the sign was there. So it appealed to him. International Society. So he went to speak to the people in there. And when he went there, he found the Westerners, the Americans and Europeans. They have become Krishna Bhaktas. So that actually impressed him so much. And he felt that this is the real thing. Krishna Bhakti is meant for every single living entity. It is not just meant for Indians or Asians. It's for everyone. And then he told somebody, he started to speak to somebody, some devotee, and he explained to him about Prabhupada and how Prabhupada went to America and how he spread Krishna consciousness there and how he made them into devotees and how they became affected by Srila Prabhupada's teachings. So he became eager to see Srila Prabhupada. Now he was already dressed in saffron, and he was a sadhu, like, from his appearance. And so he asked that devotee, "Can I please meet your guru?" So that devotee said, "Yeah, you have to speak to his secretary." And at that time, Brahmananda Maharaj was Prabhupada's secretary. So he went and spoke to him. So Prabhupada at that time just finished his lunch and he was about to take rest. So when he went and told Brahmananda, Brahmananda told him that Prabhupada just took lunch. Anyway, I will go and ask him whether he would like to meet you. So he went and told Prabhupada that one sadhu wanted to see you. Then Prabhupada's immediate response was, "Yeah, bring him in." So, Gaur Govinda Maharaj was taken to Srila Prabhupada. At that time his name was actually Brajabandhu. We can see, born in a village called Jagannathpur. He had a name, Brajabandhu, friend of Raj, friend of Vrindavan. So we can see the spiritual background that he was actually appeared in. And so Prabhupada saw him dressed as in saffron. So Prabhupada, after some exchange, Prabhupada asked him, "So are you a sannyasi?" He said, "No, I didn't officially, formally take sannyas as yet. I'm just wandering around in search of spiritual upliftment." Then Prabhupada said, "I will give you sannyas." In the first meeting, Prabhupada told him that he would give him sannyas. And then Prabhupada gave him first and second initiation. And then in 1975, on the occasion of the inauguration of Krishna Balaram Temple, Srila Prabhupada gave him sannyas and gave him the name Gaur Govinda Swami. Prabhupada gave him three instructions. You translate my books into Odia. You build a temple. And you preach around the world. Prabhupada saw his spiritual acumen. At that time in Orissa, we got a piece of land given by a very wealthy person, Nityananda Kanungo. But that land was far away from the city. But Prabhupada told him to go there and build a temple. So being instructed by Srila Prabhupada, he just went and made his... Initially, he didn't have any place to stay and there was nothing in that place. There was a little village, a little far away, and that was called Nampalli. But where the land was, there was nothing around there. And that place was so remote that that place was the hideout of dacoits. But there was a tea shop. And at the back of the tea shop, there was a room. So Gaur Govinda Maharaj made arrangement to stay in that room. And at that time, one student became very much affected by Gaur Govinda Maharaj, who later became Sachinandan Prabhu. I think he was his first disciple. Sachinandan Prabhu, in a cycle, used to take Gaur Govinda Maharaj. In the carrier of the cycle at the back, Maharaj used to sit there and he used to ride the cycle to the city, and Maharaj used to go to the offices, used to go to the houses, and he used to preach. And then with his own hands he built a hutment and he started to stay there. In 1977, when Srila Prabhupada came to India, soon after the Kumbh Mela in Allahabad. Kumbh Mela was in January. And from Kumbh Mela, Prabhupada went to Calcutta. And from Calcutta, Srila Prabhupada decided to go to Bhubaneswar. And he stayed there for 17 days. Although no proper arrangement. Actually, for Prabhupada, arrangement was made. Some nice arrangement for Prabhupada was made in some rich supporter's house. But Prabhupada decided not to stay there. Prabhupada decided to stay in that land. In that small hut, Srila Prabhupada stayed there for 17 days. With a whole lot of his disciples. And on the Nityananda Trayadasi day, Srila Prabhupada did the groundbreaking ceremony of the temple there. Gaur Govinda Maharaj took up that mission, and I have noticed those days that whoever came in contact with Gaur Govinda Maharaj became extremely influenced. I mean, even though some personalities were quite difficult to deal with, but they committed themselves to serve with Gaur Govinda Maharaj. In that, in spite of all those difficulties, in spite of all the hardship, lack of facilities, they stayed there in Bhubaneswar. And serving, helping him. One person that I remember, Jai Shishi Panchatattva Ki Jai, is one of our very wonderful godbrother, Tejas Prabhu. I think Prabhupada told Tejas Prabhu to help Gaur Govinda Maharaj with fund. Tejas Prabhu is very, very expert in fundraising. And Prabhupada suggested that he should help Gaur Govinda Maharaj in building that temple. And Tejas Prabhu, I remember those days, early days, like he used to travel around with Banomali Prabhu, another devotee, Orient devotee. And they used to travel to different places collecting funds. It was a struggle. And the building, the temple was coming up. But then gradually we saw how the city started to move there. Like today, if you go to Bhubaneswar temple, it doesn't look like it used to be a dacoit's den about 35 years ago or 40 years ago. The city has shifted in there. You see all high rises in that area, and a beautiful temple has come up. When Maharaj started to give initiation, in 85 he started to give initiation, and devotees from all over the world became very much inspired by him. Not only his disciples, but many of our God brothers became very much inspired by Gaur Govinda Maharaj. And they started to support, and then the temple came up. So, he was an extremely brilliant personality. I remember in those days, during this time, GVC meeting, Gaur Purnima festival, senior devotees give a class for one day. But Gaur Govinda Maharaj was so popular that he was asked to give the class for 2 days in a row. And he was extremely erudite, and he was very straightforward. In one hand, he was very soft and gentle, smiling. But sometimes he would become hard as a thunderbolt. Like if somebody said something without quoting the scripture, he would say it's cheating. How do you substantiate that statement? Where is it in the scriptures? And he had such a profound command over the scriptures. I had the good fortune of having some close exchanges, intimate association with Maharaj. I remember the first time I saw him was in Calcutta temple. I was just a new devotee, and one day Maharaj came and he was a sannyasi, so I made arrangements for his prasad. So, when I was serving him prasad, he was talking to me. And as I remember, all the time he was just smiling, laughing while talking to me. And he was happy to see that I joined. And at that time I didn't meet Srila Prabhupada. I just joined Mayapur. Then I met Srila Prabhupada in Kumbh Mela, 77. And Prabhupada also, in our first meeting, Srila Prabhupada gave me the instruction to translate his books into Bengali. That was the first instruction I ever received from Srila Prabhupada. You translate my books into Bengali. And that actually gave me the opportunity to come close to Srila Prabhupada. And then I was with Srila Prabhupada, serving him personally. And then Srila Prabhupada from Mayapur, he went to Bombay, from Bombay to Rishikesh. And from Rishikesh he came to Vrindavan. And at that time Prabhupada's health was very bad. As a matter of fact, Srila Prabhupada went to Vrindavan from Rishikesh in order to leave his body. In Rishikesh he told us that the time has come for him to leave his body, and he wanted to leave his body in Vrindavan. So we should make arrangements to take him to Vrindavan immediately. And we did that. That night only we packed up. In the morning we left for Vrindavan. So many devotees were coming to see Srila Prabhupada at that time. And Gaur Govinda Maharaj also came to see Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada had some very sweet exchange with him. And Gaur Govinda Maharaj was telling that the place was so remote where our land was, or where our land is in Bhuvaneshwar, that hardly anybody is coming. And Prabhupada actually told him at that time, don't worry. That place will become filled with people. I don't know whether Prabhupada said that the city would shift to that part, Bhuvaneshwar city, but one thing Prabhupada assured him, that many, many people will come to the temple. Don't worry. And then when Gaur Govinda Maharaj was leaving, Prabhupada called me and he asked me, how was he going to Mathura? So I went and asked Maharaj, how was he going to go to Mathura to catch a train there? So Maharaj said that he would take the public transport. And then Prabhupada said, no, just tell them to drop him in my car. Prabhupada wanted him to be dropped to Mathura station in his car. Then after that, I had in few occasions, I visited Bhuvaneshwar, and I remember those days, there were very few devotees, and it was, the atmosphere was very sweet. Bhagavat Prabhu was there. He was very fond of Gaur Govinda Maharaj, actually. He's our godbrother from America. Chaitanya Sinha was taking care of the construction. Another godbrother of ours. Actually, those days all were our godbrothers and godsisters. And Gaur Govinda Maharaj was just absorbed in translating and studying and giving discourses. I noticed that he would not eat, because sometimes he used to come and stay in Calcutta where I used to stay. And I used to notice that unless and until Maharaj translated certain number of pages, I think it was 10 pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, he would not eat. He would eat only after he translated certain number of pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. He was extremely austere. Another time I remember Maharaj had some sort of ulcer in his leg. And Maharaj wouldn't take any treatment, and it was getting terrible. It was getting worse and worse. And the ulcer actually was eating up his bones. But he would not take any treatment. Finally, of course, due to the intense persuasion of his devotees, Maharaj accepted to take the treatment. But otherwise, he was very detached, just depending upon Krishna. And he has a tremendous will, tremendous will, tremendous determination. And he was extremely detached. And at the same time, rich with his devotion to Krishna. He became a GBC. And we also noticed that in the GBC meetings, he would rarely speak. But when there would be some critical input needed, and if the devotees asked Maharaj, he would give such a pure Krishna conscious solution. And we could see that although he was not speaking, but he was listening so intently about the whole proceedings during our meetings. Then Maharaj started to travel around the world, and I noticed wherever he went, he got such tremendous appreciation. He used to give the class sometimes, as I said, like he was very gentle and meek normally. But when he used to give a class, he was like a lion roaring. Once one devotee was telling me, I was sitting just next to him. Why was he shouting so much? Because I could hear him straight. I told him that it's not that. It's his ecstasy that is making him speak like that. It's the ecstasy that makes one speak like that. Roaring like a lion. Maharaj was, wherever he went, he created a tremendous appreciation, and like devotees were so fond of him everywhere he went, because the devotees appreciated his scholarship, the depth of his devotion, and his very profound dealings with everyone in a very loving and intimate way. And at the same time, he was extremely straightforward. Extremely straightforward. And 20 years back, here in Mayapur, Maharaj was here during the GBC meeting, and on the day of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's appearance day, and that year also was Srila Prabhupada's 100th anniversary, 1996. One evening, Maharaj gave darshan just before evening aaratik, and he told the devotees to go and attend the aaratik. So all the devotees, after just listening to him, they just left, came to the aaratik. And Maharaj used to stay where my room is in the conch building. Maharaj's room was three rooms after that. His servant just came running to me, and he came and told that Guru Maharaj fainted. So I also ran to his room. And in the meantime, one devotee who was not a doctor, but he had some experience in whichever way, I came and I found that he was feeling Maharaj's pulse. And he told me that he left his body. It was so sudden that we couldn't even imagine that he could live. Like he gave a class, spoke about Lord Jagannath's glory, and to the group of devotees sitting there, and in a few minutes after that, he just left. The whole night we sang kirtan, we chanted kirtan. His leading disciples, Maharaj's leading disciples, wanted to take Maharaj's body to Bhubaneswar. So they took Maharaj to Bhubaneswar in a vehicle. Some of us traveled to Bhubaneswar. Radhanath Maharaj and I traveled by train to Bhubaneswar that day. And that was such a loss, and that loss came so suddenly. Anyway, there is no way of knowing how and when Krishna will call his devotees back to a new assignment. Like in a similar way, we saw how Tamal Krishna Maharaj also left his body so suddenly. At a time like that, we have to understand that Krishna actually called them to give them some more important assignment, some more important engagement. For us, it's a great loss, but we can't fathom, we cannot understand what is Krishna's plan, what is Srila Prabhupada's plan. And I'll end the class with a pastimes that His Holiness Gaur Govinda Maharaj narrated about why Krishna came as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One day in Vrindavan, Radharani was waiting for Krishna. The Sakhis arranged the kunja. They met in flower groves. So they decorated the place very beautifully for Krishna to come. Radharani was waiting, but Krishna didn't come. It was quite late, still Krishna didn't come. So one girl was sent to find out what actually happened, why Krishna is not coming. So that Duti went and found out that Krishna was with Chandravali. Chandravali, although is Radharani's sister, but she is Radharani's competitor. So incidentally, in Braja Leela, it's Radharani and Chandravali. And in Dwarka Leela, Chandravali becomes Rukmini and Radharani becomes Saptabhama. So they are always with Krishna. So Krishna is with Chandravali. Hearing that, Radharani became so upset. She said, if he ever comes here, don't allow him to come near me. I don't want to see his face. So being instructed that way, Lalita and Vishakha, sort of when Krishna came, Lalita and Vishakha stopped him. No way you can go there. She doesn't want to see you. She doesn't even want to see your face. Completely dejected, Krishna just left the place, went to the bank of Jamuna and started to cry, rolling on the ground. Radharani has rejected him. So Purnamasi came, and Purnamasi is Yogamaya. She's an elderly lady who makes all the arrangements for Krishna's pastimes. That's Yogamaya's business. So Purnamasi came and asked Krishna what happened. So Krishna narrated the whole incident. Then Purnamasi said, serious matter. Anyway, let me see what I can do. Don't worry, just stay here and I'll make some arrangement. Let's see what I can do. So after a short while, Brinda came there, Brinda Devi. So Brinda told, look, Purnamasi sent me to help you out, to meet, to unite with Radha, to arrange for you to meet Radha. So Krishna says, please do that, please do that. In her separation, my heart is breaking. So Vrinda said, look, if you go like this, there is no chance. So Krishna said, tell me what I should do. She said, you get rid of your curly hair, curly long hair, you shave your head up. You give up your peacock feather on your forehead, you give up your flute, but instead of a flute, you take a sannyas danda. And you dress up like a sannyasi, give up this form bending in three places and become straight. And on top of everything, you have to hide your blue color. Because if you go there with this complexion, she will automatically recognize you. So she said, you assume a golden color. So according to Vrinda's instruction, Krishna went there as a sannyasi. Sannyasi's business is to beg. So he was singing a song describing that I am a beggar begging for Radha's love. So and when Lalita and Vishakha heard, they were very happy. Oh, you're glorifying Srimati Radharani. So where did you learn this song? He says, I learned it from my guru, Gandharvika. Now Gandharva means art. The fine arts is called Gandharva. So they thought it is the teacher who teaches fine arts. So he said, oh, you're a very nice sannyasi. So what do you want? He said, look, I am here to help everybody. Anyone in distress, my business is to help them out. So said, you see, our mistress is in great distress. Can you help her out? He said, sure I can. So please come and tell her what she should do. He said, yes, I'm a great astrologer. I can just by seeing the lines, I can make out what's going to happen and I can suggest accordingly. So they went and reported that such and such sannyasi came, he came and he said that he can help anyone in distress. So since you are in such distress, we thought of asking him to help you, and he agreed. So Radharani came and came to the veranda. Sannyasi was taken there. Radharani came covering her face because she doesn't see anyone. She didn't see anyone but Krishna. So he said, so Sannyasi Thakur, can you please read her palm? Then he said, look, I'm a sannyasi. I can't touch a woman. So what? Then how will you read her palm? How will you read the line? He said, no, no, not the hands line. I can read the lines on the forehead. So then Lalita said, please. And no, Lalita told him that, look, she doesn't look at anybody other than Krishna. The only male she looks at is Krishna. No one else but Krishna. Said, look, I am a sannyasi. I am beyond all this bodily concept of life. So, one should not be ashamed in front of me. So tell your mistress to open her veil and let me see lines on her forehead. And so her veil was lifted. But as soon as the sannyasi saw her face, he could not retain his sannyas form. He assumed his Shyamsundar form, and this is how Krishna met Srimati Radharani and broke her anger. Shri Shri Radha Madan Mohan ki, Shri Shri Radha Madhava ki, Srila Gaur Govinda Swami Maharaj ki, Gaur Premanande.